Technorama, episode 305 for April 20th, 2011. What's that on your keyboard?
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now? The news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Buenos dias, amigo. ¿Dónde está el Technorama?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for April 20th, 2011. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. Oh, man. Frog in my throat.
Get him out.
If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm sunned because it's so nice out.
Good week?
It's been so far. It's been great, man. The weather's been good. It's like spring finally sprung.
I'm still waiting around here. It was springing, and then it got slammed back to the ground.
Well, that we had a little relapse, too. It was like, hey, we had a great day or two, and then all of a sudden, where's my coat?
Yeah.
And then so we had a little bit of back and forth, and we even had some strange storms come through with hail, and I haven't seen so much hail.
You had tornado warnings or something this weekend, didn't you?
Let's see.
I know one ripped through Raleigh.
North Carolina got it really bad. I think it kind of skirted us, but yeah, we did have a lot of storms come through, and it rained really hard. Hail. I'm like, I've seen hail once in my life until this year. It's like happened more than once.
Oh, hail no.
Oh, hail no. Hail yes.
Enough about the weather. We got a busy show coming up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up in this episode, we have a biodegradable car and other surprises. We'll take you to the birthplace of the internet. And remember Octothorpe? Well, I'm going to quiz Craig on some of the other symbols and see how he does. All that and more coming up right after this.
I'm scared.
Hi, this is Nidwife from Dad to the Servants. And by the time I'm 18 years old, I'll need to know the binary language of moisture evaporators. Therefore, I listen to Technorama with your host, Chuck Tomasi and Craig Stepp.
This is Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, Tom Zarek, and the original Captain Apollo, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Want to give a shout out to the chat room?
Ooh-ha.
We have a team going on here. The whole team participates in this show. If you happen to be on a Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern. Actually, show up a little early. There's a pre-show that goes on, some banter that goes on, a lot of fun there. And Craig and I get to discuss some of the things that don't make it into the show just because it's, hey, how you doing? Catching up on the week, that sort of thing. But the chat room is alive and well. In the chat room we have, obviously, me and you. We didn't change our handles this week, which is often a common theme on this show. People find an idea and latch onto it. We have AD Hide in a Tank. Claudio M, Captain Rootbeer, Debdrup, Gru, Guest Lurker. Uh-oh.
Watch out for him.
Well, maybe he took care of the Sinister Stalker.
Sinister
Mad Max, Susie and the CDC, Under the Bridge, Tim, and ZML 2008. Are you coming up with any kind of theme here?
Red Hot Chili Pepper songs? Under the Bridge.
Under the Bridge, CDC, In a Tank. Oh, I got it. Yeah. Thanks. AD Hide in a Tank. The theme is where to hide during a zombie apocalypse.
Oh, of course. That was my second guess.
I was going to say some old abandoned tower.
With a shotgun.
Absolutely, a shotgun.
And a chainsaw. Maybe a mace.
You don't want to miss this fun.
Yeah.
If you're not joining us in the chat room, you don't know what you're missing. Okay, now you do.
Or a cricket bat.
They're talking about possible ways you can text messages to a landline or use Google Voice or something.
See,
on there.
I'm on to something.
Yep. Craig brought that up between the voicemail show
all right,
and this
we're
show.
We're going to delete all this out of the recordings and let me develop it first, then we'll put it back in.
Sure, whatever. Looking at the birthday calendar, we have one birthday out there. April 23rd belongs to Runtime. Wow, the whole week, and we got one birthday. That's unusual.
That's amazing.
If it's your birthday and you didn't make it on the calendar, we wish you a happy birthday along with Runtime. And we want to see you on the birthday calendar next year. So go over to chuckchat.com/wiki or the whole Technorama site. There's a wiki tab. Click on that. It'll take you to our famous, fabulous wiki. And you can put your name and date on there. And like some people, they put their wives on there. Probably so we remind them that the birthday's coming up and then they don't get in trouble. Well, it's a service we can provide for absolutely free.
Yes. And if you actually put money in the tip drawer, we may actually arrange the date.
Send them flowers.
Send them flowers and everything, yeah.
We'll send them e-flowers.
Depends on how much you tip, but yeah. We can help you out.
Again, if you happen to be here on a Sunday night, you can join us in the chat room. And also, we're broadcasting live on Ustream, which you can catch later on the website. And I have to admit that I'm missing like the first minute or so because I accidentally stopped the broadcast instead of started the record. Darn those
it's
two
right.
buttons.
It's all right.
Moving along quickly.
Could be worse.
You get most of the show and you get most of the idea. The only thing you missed was the usual over there in the media corner, but you'll get that on the podcast anyway.
Yeah, just listen.
On this day in history for April 20th, 2011. It was on this date in 1534 that Jacques Cartier begins the voyage during which he discovers Canada and Labrador.
Also today in 1535 marks the date the sundog phenomenon observed over Stockholm and depicted in the famous painting Rostelfachen.
Couldn't wait to hear
Vader,
that one.
Vader Slothenland.
Louis Pasteur and Claude Bernard complete the first pasteurization test today in 1862.
And in 1902, Pierre and Marie Curie refine radium chloride.
It was also on this date in 1926 that Western Electric and Warner Brothers announced Vitaphone, a process to add sound to film. Remember those days?
No. Apollo 16, commanded by John Young, landed on the moon, commanded by John Young, 39 years ago. So good, we named it twice.
And on April 20th, 1 year ago today, Deepwater Horizon drilling rig explodes, killing 11 and causing the rig to sink, initiating a massive oil discharge in the Gulf of Mexico.
And happy birthday goes out on this date to English astronomer Gerald S. Hawkins, born in 1928.
Mr. Sulu George Takei turns 74.
He's the star of The Sulu Show.
Oh, bye.
And Clint Howard, better known to geeks as Baylock, on Star Trek's The Corbomite. The Corbomite. How'd I mess that one up? The Corbomite turns 52.
And finally, the voice of Gollum from Lord of the Rings, Andy Serkis, turns 47. It also happens to be 420 Counterculture Day. If you know what that means, go have fun with it.
Run with it, boys.
We're not gonna corrupt any youngsters explaining what 420 Day is, but
there's also Wikipedia if you want to go look.
And that's the way it was on this day for April 20th, 2011. Right.
Good news, crybabies.
Wait a minute. Here you go. Hold on a second.
Easy there, buddy.
That was my beer. Sorry.
First up in the news, we have an article that states the U.S. Postal Service used the wrong Statue of Liberty for their Statue of Liberty poster.
That's kind of funny.
Stamp.
Isn't it?
Their stamp from Gawker.com. Can you believe this? This is nuts.
Yes, I can believe it.
Instead of the real Statue of Liberty, I'll just read it. In an admirable effort to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Statue of Liberty, the U.S. Post Office has issued the commemorative first-class stamp of the wrong Statue of Liberty. This is as good as the upside-down airplane, in my opinion.
Yeah,
The Statue of Liberty depicted on the stamp is a replica located in New York Casino in Las Vegas, not the Statue of Liberty located in New York Harbor. As you can see from the above photograph, which we have on the still store on the webcam, the replica statue features a rectangular patch on the center spike, not to mention different hair and more sharply defined eyes. I didn't know about the hair.
I didn't either.
Yeah, that's just interesting. I would have spotted that second square patch, though. The differences were noted by philatelist who tipped the story to Lynn Stamp News. USPS spokesperson Roy Betts told the New York Times, "We still love the stamp design and would have selected this photograph anyway." Yeah, sure, guys.
Yeah.
Former Mayor Ed
just
Koch
like we did
was
now.
Less... Former Mayor Ed Koch was less diplomatic. It simply means the post office is doing a stupid thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, in all fairness, if you look at the picture, it's an upshot of the face. And, I mean, to the casual observer, I wouldn't have picked it out, to be honest with you.
No, the casual observer wouldn't, but now...
Oh, no, now I'm like, yeah, there was like a patch on the leading point on the crown, but still.
Did it break? Did somebody... Was it injured in the reef?
I thought it was an access door at first, but I guess not. Like tourists can go in and out of that door.
Right. That's for the maintenance workers.
Look where I'm standing. He opens up. Ah! All right.
But. Next up in the news, we have a little bad news. Jerry Lawson, the man who invented the video game cartridge, died last Saturday morning of a heart attack in Mountain View, California hospital at the age of 70. His brainchild, the Fairchild Channel F video game system, was commonly referred to as the Channel F, came out just 1 year before Atari's cartridge console, the VCS, opening the floodgates of modern gaming. His earliest foray into consumer electronics began early on, but it wasn't until he joined Fairchild in 1970 that he really made his mark on the tech industry.
Wow.
During that time, he became the only black member of the infamous Homebrew Computer Club that counted Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak as members. He was honored at this year's GDC for his monumental contribution to modern gaming. Wow.
Under the bridge, Tim says, put his ashes in the cartridge or two.
That's wrong. I love the box he's holding on his lap and the background image. It's like everything in the 70s had to be really obnoxiously bright rainbow colors.
Yeah. No, but kudos to him, man. That's awesome. But yeah, I never heard of the Channel F system. Have you?
No, I've heard of Fairchild just because, they made a lot of chips and whatnot.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. But, yeah. I wonder if you can get an emulator and play some of his games.
Maybe. All right, we got the... up next, we have...
Hacks and Stray Stories!
Thanks, Lenny.
I don't know why...
I said, thanks, Lenny.
You're welcome. He comes in every once in a while. Yeah. I don't know why I thought of this, but when I saw this picture on Gizmodo, it said, the biodegradable golf ball is made from lobster. And I thought of Zoidberg.
Hey, I'm missing a couple of things here. I'm sorry.
Yo's my relatives, will you, I say. Well, think of how many golf balls are lost in the woods or in rivers and things.
No, wait.
Biodegradable makes sense.
I'm sorry. They hit the ball and he goes, ah! Sorry. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Lobsters. Not only do they have delicious meat, their shells have a use too. Researchers at the University of Maine have developed a biodegradable golf ball from lobster shells. Now that makes sense.
Okay.
Think about it. What do you do with the lobster shell? Nothing. You don't eat it. But if you recycled it, kind of like almond shells, you got something there.
Well, I would say that they're actually going to impede on a business. The business of recycling the balls, because there's a lot of people that go out and fetch all these balls and make money by cleaning them and putting them back into service.
Yes, they do. Oh, well, that's a huge billion-dollar market there.
Well, people make money off of it, so...
Yeah, okay.
It would suck.
If that's your only skill in life, God bless you, and good luck.
I didn't say skill, just the smarts to have a stress-free job and picking up golf balls.
No, no, you gotta.
There's some wisdom in there.
Battle the woodchucks and things that are swimming around and the muskrats that are swimming around in the water hazards. If we just have muskrats around here, you can keep your alligators.
Yeah, come on down and yeah, you should see how we play golf here in the South.
This ball is cheaper than the typical biodegradable ball, which is 19 cents versus $1, and can be hit straight into the ocean without the environment weighing down on your game. Hey, maybe they'll get driving ranges on the back of cruise ships again.
You ever seen that episode of Seinfeld where the guy hit the golf or the golf ball out into the ocean? Was it George? Was it George or... anyway, one of them was... He had the golf ball out in the ocean and a whale choked on it. George said he was a marine biologist and saved it or something. Was it a seal? Maybe it was I'm trying to remember what it was.
I don't remember
now.
That one.
But yeah, they hit it out in the ocean and the animal got choked on it. See, that would work. No, it would still get choked on it. What's the biodegrading time on this thing?
Didn't say.
Hmm. Okay. Well, anyway.
Anyway,
I killed that
also
story, didn't
in
I?
The biodegradable, we have a biodegradable car. Yes, that's right.
Is made there out of lobster shells. And I'm sorry.
From Engadget, is there any sadder sight than a 1958 Plymouth Fury rotting in the woods, Christine style? Its dead headlights staring into the gloaming. We don't think so. That's why we're downright giddy over Kenneth Kobabu's Phoenix Roadster, a biodegradable concept car made from bamboo, rattan, steel, and nylon. Style-wise, it's propped somewhere between Tata's Nano and Tesla's Roadster, and there's no word on yet what might be under the hood, presumably a smallish electric engine, or Stardust-powered unicorn, perhaps.
Now, you know, I don't want my car biodegrading. No. Great idea, no.
This thing does... I'm not sure what to make of this. It looks like someone stretched a wicker chair over a hammock or something.
Look at the seats.
Yeah, the seats look like an upturned broom. The tires, although the back tires are kind of cool looking.
I was going to say the back tires, that's an interesting idea where the actual... the hubs of the wheels are actually resting on the bottom of the tire.
I might put a carbon fiber composite shell over this thing and go nuts. That'd be fun.
Yeah. I don't want my car biodegrading when I'm relying on it.
What if your biodegradable car got hit by a biodegradable golf ball?
They just fall apart. I don't know.
This is just really bizarre stuff we came out with this week, and I was having fun with it.
I wonder if you can eat this. Now, see, a car that I could eat, you know, on my own.
Can you eat it? I think you can sweep with this thing.
If I could have a car that I could eat, see, I can eat it on my own schedule. So it doesn't.
What would you do at the drive-thru?
What would you do
when you go to the drive-up window? Could I have some fries? I need to repair the back bumper.
Yeah. Some ketchup with my car.
And I'll take your grease for my converted diesel engine.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm moving in here to McDonald's.
It's a whole smart car industry.
Just live here.
Oh, I forgot to do this early in the show. I should literally look at the show notes a little closer. I want to give a shout out to Dorothy Yamamoto. You may know who she is, right?
She was in charge of the battleship, right?
No. She's the inventor of the Twit logo. Probably one of her more unsung famous
that
things.
Yamamoto.
Yeah. That
I was thinking
Yamamoto.
Star Blazers. You know the battleship Yamamoto?
Yeah. We also met her at the Podcast Expo in 2007. She did some filming with us. I think it was when we were on the
remember
Twit
that.
Panel, the Fit panel.
Now that you mention it, yeah.
So shout out to her. She tweeted me and said she's enjoying the show, catching up. We're entertaining as always. So thank you very much.
Is she referring to our show?
It's 420 day, remember.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Really
let me get
funny
my
today. You're gonna give this show a new theme in the chat room, man.
Yeah. What were you guys thinking?
Exactly. Hey, we got remember when segment? Yes, we do. Oh, one of our favorite things is in the remember when segment is the internet.
Yes, it's always my favorite thing. Actually, it's the basis of a lot of my job.
a lot of our jobs.
I love it.
What you see on the still store is the birthplace of the internet. This is the 3420 Belter Hall at UCLA. Looks cool and decidedly 1970s, right? Long manes on the guys, gnarly mustaches, and vintage technology cabinets. Stop it.
That's how they invented the internet.
What were they doing in there?
Dude, I got a great idea, man. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Turns out this is where the internet was born. Oh, what? Yeah. The first internet message was sent from a node of the ARPA network, a computer network commissioned by the U.S. Department of Defense. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
In UCLA to Stanford on October 29th, 1969. That ARPA network became known. It became what we now know as the internet. Making
Wait, I was born before the internet.
Barely.
Well,
junior.
About 8 months.
Well, think about it. This is only months after man landed on the moon.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That ARPA network became what we now know as the internet, making that message the first use of the internet, and that message was sent inside 3420 Belter. But it was long forgotten, not until Brad Fidler, a history doctoral candidate, researched and investigated pictures, did he realize that the birthplace of the internet, in quotes, was a boring old undergraduate classroom. Not anymore, though. 3420 Belter was being restored back to its 1969 roots to become Kleinrock Internet Heritage Site and Archive.
Hmm. Sweet.
Wow.
We should go there.
I had equipment in college that looked a lot like this. Am I really that old?
Yes.
Oh, check out the dude with the striped pants. Those are awesome. Checked shirt and vertical stripes on the pants.
Yeah. And I dig the guy's pocket protector right beside him.
I think I went to school with that guy. That's frightening as all can be.
Oh, boy.
All right. Did you know they're selling some, speaking of history, they're selling some space history?
Space junk?
Not junk.
Okay.
If it is, this is some of the most expensive junk I've ever seen.
And by the way, may I say that that's the saddest looking astronaut suit I've seen. It's got his shoulders kind of down, and it looks
it's all dirty.
He looks depressed.
Yeah, he looks like Marvin from
Hitchhikers.
That's actually one of the cosmonauts. The space age officially began 50 years ago when Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin, you know, we've been talking about him a lot recently because of the 50th anniversary.
Yuri's night the other night, last week.
He became, you know, it'd be really cool as if he was still alive.
Yeah, it would be.
He became the first human to journey into the outer space when his Vostok spacecraft completed an orbit of the Earth on April 12, 1961. The whole world is celebrating this big event. Considering the fact that this big occasion for space enthusiasts, and after a Russian businessman spent $3 million to buy the Vostok 3KA2 capsule yesterday. Wow. $3 million. I didn't even know that thing was still around. I thought everything got recycled.
Yeah.
We are expecting... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, look at... Go ahead. No, continue.
Okay, we are expecting next month's Bonham Space History Sale to start a bidding war. We've already included this event as one of the most important upcoming auctions of 2011. After the jump, we'll show some pictures here. We have the Russian spacesuit, the Sokol K. Let me get that up there for
Circle
you.
Circle K?
Circle K, right. Estimated to go for $100,000 to $150,000 U.S. Yikes and double yikes. A little lower.
It does
look
a little dirty, doesn't it?
Yeah, where was he crawling around if he was just in space? These guys look like they were rummaging.
It looks like one suit and the helmet's different. That's all.
We have Scott's Lunar Surface Stopwatch. I love the duct tape at about 24 seconds, 23 and a half seconds.
That's the get out of here mark.
That's expected to go for $120,000 to $180,000. Got a little piece of Velcro on the back. That's space age. We know where Velcro came from.
Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way,
go
ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I want to comment on the next slide.
This stopwatch was used to time engine burns of the Apollo 15 lunar module Falcon. The timer was used to time the duration of the critical descent orbit insertion or DOI maneuver. The Bulova stopwatch has 2-inch main dial with second hand registering up to 30 seconds in increments of 0.1 seconds.
Hmm.
Takes a licking and... Oh, that's Timex.
Well, the next suit is Strekaloff's Soyuz TM-10 spacesuit.
Yeah.
And it looks like an upgrade from Yuri's there because these are kind of shrugging their shoulders like, eh.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, you could probably animate these to dance.
Yeah, the early ones were like, "Eh, we're done," and then this one's like, "Eh." So it says this spacesuit has spent 130 days in space. Soyuz 10M, or I'm sorry, TM10 flight engineer Gadi Strekaloff wore the Strekaloff KV2 pressure suit manufactured by Zvezda's.
Zvezda. You are a master of pronouncing Russian names.
Ah, da.
I like the movie camera from the lunar surface. Ah, remember when they were sending back the TV images? This thin little gem is expected to go for $60,000 to $80,000.
It's fake, because how would it be down here on Earth if they used it on the moon?
This is one of the two 16, there's one still up there, 16mm motion picture data acquisition cameras, or DACs, carried in the Apollo 14 lunar module Antares.
Yes.
The flown data acquisition camera model 308A was manufactured by J.A. Maurer, Inc.
See, NASA has an answer for every question. Oh, there was actually two. Well played, NASA. Well played.
They've got Michael Collins' crew signed Apollo 11 emblem, and I'm trying to figure out what this strap thing is. The flown PLSS strap exposed to the lunar surface.
Will they drop it?
I don't know. $40,000 to $60,000. I read the description. It still doesn't make any sense to me. This is the lower right side strap from Apollo 14 lunar module pilot Edgar Mitchell's portable life support system. The strap has been signed and inscribed by Edgar Mitchell, and it reads, "This lower right backpack strap helped support my PLSS during both my moonwalks."
Okay. It supported his PLSS. What does that stand for in NASA speak?
Looks like, you know, you could probably sell these guys lunar jock straps, too, for $1 billion.
I think that's what he was supporting.
Yeah.
With a strap. Sorry.
We have a lunar dust embedded optical device, which if it was embedded with lunar dust, I'm not sure what good an optical device is doing us today. Several letters, including the checklist, and I like this one, the confirmed the first man in space flight. This is a very important document, and it should technically have proclaimed Alan Shepard's flight as the first successful manned space flight. Alan Shepard was the first American in space.
Number 10 was the Polaroid they took and signed.
Aww.
Hey, moon is here.
Buzz had
you
his eyes closed. Yeah, Neil blinked during the picture. Do it over.
Yeah. I like the moon is here. Wish you're beautiful.
Nice.
All right. Sorry.
Speaking of old pictures, we have a report of somebody who found a pack of film that was 50 years past its expiration. See, it's developed before May 1959.
Wow.
So they put it in a camera. I'm amazed they had a camera to put this in. This is the old format that was like 2 by 3 inches or so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And probably one of those kind of, you look down through the top. And amazingly, the pictures came out and they look like they're 50 years old.
Wow. That was awesome.
So taking pictures back then was just as much a function of the film, the fact that the film still worked, and the camera still worked. But when they developed it, I mean, these are commonplace. It would have been funny to take a picture of like a something really modern that wasn't around in 1959, mm-hmm. like a, you know, brand new Cadillac Escalade or something. It's like,
right.
Wow, check out the Escalade from the future.
Yeah. There's Marty and Doc Brown.
Right. Standing next to the clock.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking of. Oh, this is pretty cool, though. I like the pictures. That's neat. It's nothing spectacular. I'm amazed they came out because, you know, I guess it depends on the condition they were stored in, but my dad, this has been years ago now, he had a roll of film that I know had been sitting in a drawer for a long time, and they were pictures he had taken while he was in Vietnam. And when they came out, they were kind of had splotches and a little orangey, you know, weren't great. Yeah. Unless it was just a reflection of his photography skills, I don't know, but but you know, they came out and they looked kind of crappy. So I'm amazed this actually turned out well.
We also have one final article in the Remember One segment. Then we're going to take a quick break into the media corner. This one just, you know, there's nothing funnier than things dealing with stink and toilets and things like that. So
yeah.
I found an article on IO9, World War II resistance fighters used government-developed stench as a weapon. It was early in the 1940s, a war stretched across the globe. Times were desperate, and there was no method people were too proud to use, including a stink bomb. There are plenty of books, shows, and movies about the French resistance moving during World War II. Other countries are quick to point out that they had as dedicated resistance movements as France did. It's true, but let's face it. If you want a story told about your resistance movement, you should really have based it in Paris. In war stories, certain tactics are generally omitted. Sure, any weapon that works will be used at the time, but it doesn't look good on screen. Who, me? I was one of those non-cinematic weapons.
I like how you just drop in and make a little... all right, go ahead.
Let's see. Who, me? Was developed by the American Office of Strategic Services. It was given out as pocket-sized atomizers so it could be used by ordinary citizens in the crowd. As it stunk, literally, a resistance fighter was supposed to saunter up to a German officer, spritz him with the compound, and walk away.
Yeah.
I guess it was an early version of pepper spray or something.
Yeah.
The smell of the compound was compared to that of a garbage dumpster in summer, bad eggs, or rotting carcasses. It was designed to closely resemble the smell of human feces. The German officer was meant to be humiliated as he walked around smelling like he'd pooped his pants. His men were supposed to lose confidence in him, and the entire army was meant to be demoralized before the mighty stench of the French resistance and American allies. Okay, so you're a resistance fighter, and you walk up to the Nazi officer, and you spritz him with this. What do you think he's going to do? He's going to shoot you.
He start wiping it off. You know, whatever.
Hey. Achtung, lieber.
Yeah.
Mein poopy pants.
You know, actually, I was thinking when you said they were developing this a long time ago, I kept thinking, we had this in the old West. Remember Blazing Saddles? What are we having tonight, Cookie? Beans again? Sorry, it just came to my head. I don't know.
There is a short video on how you can build one of these yourself if you really want.
Actually, the other thing that came to mind when you said going up to the officer and spraying him, you remember like Canon Camera or one of those shows, the guy would go up there and act like he sneezed, but he sprayed him on the back of the neck with a water bottle. He'd go, achoo, and spray him. So the people were like, oh. It was just water, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I miss Candid Camera. We should do that as a web. We're going to take a real quick break and be back with the Media Corner right after this.
Hi, my name is Julia Pose and I'm 11 years old. I love gymnastics and karate. I have to go to school and I do all the other things normal kids do. But I'm more than that. I'm a geek. I listen to Technorama Podcast. It helps me to maintain my inner geek. For your own inner geek, just go to www.chuckchat.com/technorama. I'm ready for my download, Mr. Tomasi.
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from Mythbusters, and Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
All right, I'm pretty sure everybody's familiar with the Verizon guy, you know, Can You Hear Me Now? He's been doing that for, what, about 10 years or so?
Yeah, they said, hey, by the way, you're fired. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, he got the boot. You won't be able to hear him for much longer. Paul Marsarelli. Okay, somebody spelled it wrong somewhere else. AKA the Verizon guy is being let go. As it turns out, that wasn't even his character's name. VZW settling on Test Man when scripting the early shots.
Yeah, that's catchy.
Now that company is taking its ads in different directions, the direction apparently does not include Mr. Marcirelli. But based on the tales he recounted to The Atlantic, that may be a good thing. Paul once heard someone say, "Can you hear me now?" as his grandmother's funeral as her body was being lowered into the grave.
Oh, that's just wrong.
Yep, it's time for a change.
It is, because, you know, they've stretched this one out a lot longer than some other one. Hey, he's outlasted the Mac and PC ads.
He's just he's right up there with the Energizer Bunny.
Yes. Well, the Energizer Bunny is a little fuzzy and cute.
You know what? He should show up as like Fargo's brother on Eureka.
Yeah.
No. It'd still be in that same, you know, kind of geek theme.
And they kind of have to throw in the, did you hear that?
No, they couldn't use the trademark line, no, but they could certainly hint at it.
That's why I said use the line like, "Did you hear that?"
Yeah, just something subtle.
Yeah.
"I'm not sure if you can hear me."
Yeah. "Could you hear me yesterday?"
I also heard a rendition of Super Mario Brothers music done by a bluegrass band.
How many different ways can you do the Super Mario Brothers thing?
This one was really good, though. This is done by a bluegrass band called the Cleverly Trio. You gotta hear this.
Sweet.
We got a banjo. We got a bass. We got a guitar. Like a little mandolin or something going on.
I can still hear. I can hear. Wing, wing, wing. You know, he's just jumping.
Bling. I love this.
That's awesome.
I tell you what. Do not open the next link that says quiz, okay?
Hey, okay. Hey, by the way, I have to say, this kind of reminds me of Jonathan Colton that did The Baby's Got Back.
Yeah, nice.
The folksy song thing. Okay. All right, I haven't opened the link. I have not opened the link.
Okay. You remember Octothorpe?
Yes. Very right? Well.
Okay. What do you call Octothorpe? What's the common name? Give me a common name for Octothorpe.
The number sign?
Okay, that'll work. Yep.
Some people say
pound.
Pound
or hash or sharp.
Sure, yeah.
Have you heard of it referred to as crunch?
Crunch.
Or hex? It's used to denote hex numbers? Yeah, yeah.
True, okay, I knew that, yeah.
Okay, here are some other ones about that symbol that you may or may not have heard of.
Okay.
Mesh? Grid?
Mesh? Oh, wait, mash?
No, mesh.
Mesh. Mesh, okay.
You know, like it's woven together, it's mesh.
I can see that, okay.
Grid.
Okay.
Cross hatch.
Okay.
Flash.
I don't get that one.
Square. Pink pen.
I think those are starting to fade. Yeah. Okay.
Tic tac toe. Scratch mark.
Scratch mark.
Thud.
No.
Thump.
What?
I'm going to argue with this last one. This is not a splat. Splat is something else. I don't know who came up with that splat. Julie and I were looking at musical symbols, actually. We noticed, you familiar with the sharp and the flat symbol and natural?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So sharp is a number sign, right? We talked that one. And a flat is like that little script B thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're writing music in a sharp, like D sharp or something, and you want to go to a natural, you put what looks like the number sign or the hash with like four of its legs ripped off, kind of like a spider. And we thought, that's really cruel.
It is cruel.
That's just what I thought. A natural looked like a sharp with some of the legs ripped off. Okay, let's try these for you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm, sure.
You tell me what punctuation symbol this is. Wow. Hey.
Exclamation point.
Oh, yeah, good.
Okay.
Good. It also goes by factorial, which, yeah, mm-hmm. If you're mathematically inclined. Okay, here are the common names. Exclamation mark, bang, pling, excl, not, shriek, not for logical, yeah.
Well, the bang I've definitely heard.
Rare names, factorial, exclam, smash,
wait a
cuss.
Minute, exclam, like you couldn't afford the rest of the word?
Smash, cuss, boing, yell, wow, hey, wham, eureka.
Cuss.
Spark spot, soldier, control.
Okay.
All right. Try this one.
All right.
Diuresis.
Diuresis.
Dirk.
I'm guessing a period.
Rabbit ears.
Rabbit ears? A V? No.
That's a punctuation now.
Yeah. Rabbit ears.
How about double prime?
Double prime? No.
Literal mark?
You're not talking about like a tilde, are you?
No.
Uh-huh.
It's double quote or quotation marks.
Oh, are you serious? What?
Rabbit ears.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay, try this one. Let's see if I do this without giving it away. Big money.
Dollar sign?
Right.
Yeah.
these are pretty easy. Currency, symbol, buck, cash, string. Mm-hmm. Probably should have said string.
That string? Would have been easier. I would have guessed that. Yeah, sure.
Oh, here's a good one. The only rare comment they have on this one. 007.
007?
Yep.
And that's
try this one.
I mean, one symbol, right?
Yeah. Try this one. Grapes.
Grapes? Percent?
Yes.
Is it? Okay. Right.
The only two left were mod and percent. You would have got it for mod, being a programmer. Yeah. All right. Let's go with this one. Pretzel.
The ampersand.
Yeah. Pretzel, okay. Background, bit and, ampersand, and per sand, which was the original name for it. It turned into ampersand later. Reference, address, and sign, and amper and amp. All right. Let's go with this one. Spark.
The star, asterisk?
Nope.
No?
Glitch.
Glitch.
Irk.
Sounds like this Mork's cousin.
You probably start getting it now. Tick.
Oh, the little single quote?
Apostrophe, yeah.
Oh, the prime. Apostrophe, yeah, okay.
Pop, closing single. We get into some... let's stick with single symbols for a minute.
Okay. I don't like that laugh.
Dingle.
Dingle? What? A dingle?
That's the best one in here.
What is that supposed to be? Dingle, dingle, dingle.
You'll get it now. How about twinkle? Glob. I'm not sure why this one's in here. Nathan
asterisk?
Hale.
Is this an asterisk?
Yes.
Okay, okay.
Spider, get it. Splat, star, asterisk, wild card, aster, gear was the other one that I would have given it away.
Maybe.
Here's an easy one for you. Intersection.
Intersection. The plus sign?
Yep.
Okay, okay.
Also known as cross or add.
Mm-hmm.
Tail.
Tail. What? What a tail?
Sedilla.
Oh, wait. A comma.
Yes. Very okay. Good.
I was thinking, almost said semicolon.
Here's another one.
Dak.
Worm. Option. Bitthorpe.
Bitthorpe. Oh, no. It's Octothorpe's cousin.
Bitthorpe, right.
I don't know that one.
The only thing left are the common names, minus, hyphen, and dash.
Oh, pfft. Okay.
A dak? Radix point.
A period?
Yes. Full okay. Stop, spot, decimal point, point, dot, period.
Okay. All right.
Let's go with this one. Solidus.
Solidus.
Slack.
Backslash?
Slacker. Vergul. Slack.
Oh, I didn't get it.
Over.
Over?
That one should have given you a clue.
I don't know. Like
if I said 7/32.
Oh, a forward slash?
Like forward slash, yes. Slash, stroke, slant, forward slash.
Wow.
Okay.
Over?
Over. Yeah. Like when you use it in a sentence, it's 3/4.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You say 3/4. If you were typing it on a word processor or something.
Okay.
Well, then this is pretty easy. Reversed vergul.
Okay. A backslash.
Yeah.
Okay.
This one has more names, actually. Backslash, slosh, backslant, hack, whack, escape, reverse, slash. Let's see. Two spot.
Whack.
Easy one. Two spot.
Not an equal sign, is it?
Nope.
No, a colon.
Right.
Okay.
Quadrathorpe.
Quadrathorpe. I'm actually looking at my keyboard trying to see what would make sense.
Nothing.
Quadrathorpe.
This might make it a little easier. Half mesh.
Half mesh. No.
Gets. These we'd use in a sentence. Gets and takes.
Now, would that be an equal sign?
Yeah, it would be an equal sign.
Because that was the thing that kept out in my head was like so-and-so and so-and-so gets 2-5, you know, kind of. Okay.
Here's a dandy. Weenie.
Weenie?
Hybrid.
Who refers to the, huh?
Hybrid.
Hybrid. Oh, a semicolon.
Oh, how'd you get that?
A hybrid, comma,
I was ready to send colon. Out the last one, which is pit thwang.
Oh, it just picked a weenie? That's a weenie?
Really?
Whose weenie looks like? Never mind.
Some interesting ones on here. All right. I say you pass.
Oh, okay. Well.
You got more than you failed, that's for sure.
I know. Well, I was surprised myself, especially over.
Over. There's no way I'm going to remember half of those. We're going to have to redo this quiz later. You can throw it back at me.
Yeah, I may have to.
Everybody, study your symbols, and if you want to sound like a real techno-weenie, yeah.
All right, boys and girls, your assignment for tomorrow, for tonight, for your homework.
Tell somebody to press the bit-thorpe.
The quad-thorpe.
Quadrathorpe. It's an equal sign. I know. You're just not very educated.
Yeah. I knew.
We got a couple of things in the Geek Library I wanted to mention. There's Honest Logos. If you head over to honestlogos.com, or actually designerscouch.org, there's this guy who designs logos of what things represent that they should really be. Like, he takes McDonald's and he does the golden arches but changes the words to say McDiabetes. Or I like YouTube.
I like the YouTube one that says cat videos.
Cat videos. It says cat where it normally says you, and videos in that box that says, yeah, nice stuff.
The camel on the camel cigarettes.
Cancer. And the camel's head is all drooped down. It's lovely.
Yeah, poor thing.
Also want to give Michelle some thanks. She sent us a whole bunch of links. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Nintendo one. Nothing to do.
Nothing to do. And they look like the real... Yeah, you know, PlayStation says procrastination, so he's got the fonts and stuff down.
This one doesn't look like it's messed with at all. The MTV, moronic television.
Absolutely, yeah. It's perfect.
I'll buy that.
A special mention to listener Michelle, a.k.a. Country Signs. She sent us a link to Star Wars Craft Book Review. Always love the Star Wars stuff. Doctor Who paper cutouts, including lots of TARDISes and characters in there. So go check them out in our Geek Library. And if you really want to have some fun, you do the Super Mario 3D fridge paper cutout, and then you can, you know, play that banjo music while you go.
Yeah.
There we go.
There you go.
On your refrigerator in paper.
You should let that play out as we do the end of the show.
We appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call listener line at 206-222-2428. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Or send us a Skype message. Just add Chuck Chat to your message. Or, you know, there's always lots of ways to get a hold of us. All that contact information. I love this part of the song.
I'm just listening to it.
Don't forget about tipping the tip jar. And, you know, we still have that survey going on. I haven't seen many people do that. Or review on iTunes. We really appreciate that, too. Okay, Ben, wrap it up. One more time.
Just let it play out, man. Go ahead and finish.
I'm not going to get the whole thing done. It's got like 5 seconds left. There we go. Thank you very much to the Cleverly Trio, which is actually like five guys in there. I'm not sure how that works. And special thanks to Michelle and the others who gave us links for this week's show, including Matt Marv, who provides all the great blog content during the week. sends us a voicemail and whatnot. If you're not going over to the website, occasionally you want to get the RSS feed so you can get the content automatically delivered to you. Don't forget, we are doing TV reviews of our favorite shows. I know a lot of end of seasons are coming up. You won't want to miss that. And if you do, well, hey, be warned, there's lots of spoilers in these things, too. We're having a lot of fun writing those up.
Yeah.
So check them out. Ustream, who keeps our modest live streams going on Sunday nights and archives these shows for us. Chat room provided by thinstack.net. Thank you very much to Steve Rickenberg and the Gru Crew. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. We're also affiliated with Farpoint Media. Head over to those websites and you'll find a whole bunch of stuff. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And as always, give me a binary high five.
101.
And a 420.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.